the point of someone, can you accept someone's view on moral relativism, for example?
Yes. Because if I think in the world which is absolute, I never found it. There are things which we do which, you know, I've got a faulty, impure, we live in a world of compromises, sometimes contradictions. But instead of having an absolute morality, sometimes I go back to, again, Vietnam War. There was something called the Myanmar Massacre, where US troops under Lieutenant Kelly, I still remember this, were ordered to go to the village of My Lai and to kill every man, woman and child indiscriminately. It was one of the first times a journalist was with the troops, blew the whistle and became a it became a scandal, and which Lieutenant Kelly was court-martialed and put in jail. But some enterprising journalist did a follow-up 30 years later to see what happened to those soldiers who followed orders and shot men, women and children indiscriminately. And there was always the, like in any experiment, the control. There was one soldier, he was an Afro-American soldier, who refused to go in to shoot indiscriminately. He disobeyed orders at war. And they interviewed him afterwards. And of all the people they found, he was the only one who you could say was happy, well-adjusted, with a good emotional life, a wife and family. You know, he was fine. They asked him, but you have to go to military prison for so many years. He said, yes, but it was worth it. A military prison in the United States is much more severe than any prison in the UK. He said, would you be willing to do that? But why? How could you know you were going to be punished, but stand up for what you believed was right? You know, were you a religious person? He said, no, I didn't have a religion. I joined the US Army because I was born in some ghetto somewhere, in some place of no hope, no future, and I only joined the military to get a life out of the ghettos of drugs and violence. And he said, well, did you have a philosophy degree from Oxford? No, I was just an ordinary soldier. So how could you do that? And he said, I just felt my heart. And I just knew it was wrong, I just couldn't do it. He didn't need an education to know it was wrong. And sometimes, please excuse me, if there are any philosophers here, sometimes it's the education which is used as an excuse to go against what one knows is right or wrong. One feels it. If you've ever killed anything, the only one thing which I've ever killed was a mouse. After my father passed away, my mother was terrified of mice. I put a mouse trap out when I caught it and killed it. I felt so bad about that. I took that mouse to the trash can and I stroked it. Its fur was so beautiful, so soft. His whole body was, and I was responsible for killing it. It's the last thing I killed. Couldn't get it anymore. When you actually saw it, felt it, and knew what you'd done, the intuition was too strong to do that again. So it's one of the reasons why morality for me here is one thing which I even had a seminar with members of the British Army who were fighting in Iraq, in the Iraq War. I told them, never allow your no to stand in the way of truth. You're learning what you're told. That was his advantage. He never got to university, he never got to a church or a mosque or a Buddhist temple. He wasn't indoctrinated, he wasn't told what to believe. He knew it instinctively. It was wrong. There you found the source of morality.
So do you, are you saying basically you believe that what's right and what's wrong, what's ethical and what's not, is something that all human beings have a very primal intuition of?
Yes. Yes.
Is veered away through life's difficulties and nurture, for example.
It's,
so you believe that humans are naturally good, for example.
It's distorted by experts.
Right.
One of the things which, one of the experiences I had, I was always up for challenges. So there was a local radio show, Talkback Radio, said, "No, you're very good answering questions. Can you come on our show?" And so, late Friday evening, 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock, I got to the radio studio. I didn't have time to actually check what the show was about. Until we were in the studio, the headphones were on, the microphone just this far away, the red lights were on, we were on air. And the presenter said, "Welcome to tonight's show. We have Professor Gabriel Morrissey, the author of many books on sex and relationships in Australia. And we have the Buddhist monk," and they could not pronounce my name, so it's just said Mr. Monk, "on our show on adult themes." And I thought, "Adult, well, you're in trouble now. You should have done research, at least find out what show you're on." There's a challenge, but I was all up for challenges. So I was on an adult theme show, Talkback. And I remember why it was great, but I didn't have any understanding or knowledge, because I could see things from a fresh mind. And this taxi driver called it, wanted to speak to Mr. Monk. And he said, "I'm married, I'm having an affair, is that right?" Because I wasn't an expert, I saw through him straight away. I said, "If that was right, you would not be ringing me out to ask." And he hung up immediately. I nailed him. He wanted to go to some expert to actually to convince him that what he knew was wrong was okay. A lot of times, do you really need an expert? When you know you're hurting yourself and others. So to me, a lot of times, with the knowledge, we can actually choose which part of the knowledge to justify what we know is wrong, to get rid of our sense of guilt and shame. It's okay, everyone else is doing it. When a monk comes along, we don't do that. Yeah, I didn't even know that. It's not true. It is true. We can move ethics. Why? Because it feels good. I often call myself a good time monk. I have a good time. How do you have a good time by being good? Anyway, how do you? Is there any other questions? If you like. Yes?
Is karma relative?
Relative? How do you mean that?
So, if, for example, you do something quite, that you think is quite an insignificant thing, a good, positive thing, can it have an enormous impact in a positive way? How does karma work?
One of the important parts of karma is what you mean, your motivation, where you're coming from. It really comes from kindness, from peace, from gentleness. And it usually has a good flavour. It may not work first time, but you learn from the results, you grow. One of the things which is important, I was talking about this morning, it's all right to make mistakes. Don't be ashamed of making mistakes. So mistakes is where we learn. We have a good mind, so kindness, gentleness, not arrogant or conceited. If you make a mistake, you admit it, you learn, and you grow, you get better by making mistakes. So this is how we make use of our life. And then you learn that, please, if you're in any relationship, whether it's in work, in the faculty, or in a family, please allow one another to make mistakes, get forgiven, and then you learn to do better next time. And that's called growth. So even if you are badly hurt, say by a relationship which goes pear-shaped, please don't hide your heart in a concrete bunker. You don't get hurt again. You don't grow either. You stagnate. You go out and learn. No, maybe one of your mistakes will be better next time. That's karma and growth.
The karma you're talking about, when you're thinking something to be bad, is that still the same thing? When you're doing it and actually thinking about it?
Thinking about it.
Saying, you think something bad about that person.
Yeah. Well, there was that story of that there was a Christian monastery, very, very strict, where you were only allowed to speak once every 7 years. And after 7 years, this very dedicated Christian monk, it was his turn to speak to the abbot the following morning. And he never slept all night. He wanted to impress his boss with something really profound. And as soon as he went to the abbot's office, his mind went blank. He forgot all his preparation. And what he said is, the food in this monastery is terrible. He blew his first chance in 7 years. So he went back to his cell and was contemplated again for another 7 years. After 14 years, he was a bit more relaxed. He had another thing profound thing to say. He slept this time, but again, when it came to the being in front of the abbot, his mind just went blank again. And what he says is, we all have to work far too much in this monastery. That's not what he planned to say, it just came out. The second time, he'd blown his chance to impress his abbot. The third time, after 21 years in the monastery, this time he said exactly what he meant to say. He went into his abbot's office and said, I can't stand this monastery any longer, I'm leaving. To which the abbot said, very good. You've done nothing but complain ever since you came here. That's not just a joke, because that's exactly the other spot on. You've been complaining, 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 silently all the time. The thoughts, when they're repeated, become your reality. You think first. You speak and act later in accordance with your thoughts. They're not just idle thoughts, when they're repeated, they're like seeds which then blossom forth as actually weeds or flowers in speech or in actions. But be careful with your thoughts. Any other quick question? Yes?
Quickly. In developing the right understanding, can intent change karma's strength?
Oh, yeah.
In the same act?
Yes, the intent can change the karma's act, and you can always change karma too. So it depends on whatever karma you've done in the past, you can change it by your attitudes. Why is it that sometimes people do some bad things in their life, but they never seem to hurt, or get punished or whatever, or have a wonderful life? Sometimes it's because when we have a positive mind state, not a mind state of guilt, a positive mind state can actually bring up some of the good karma from the past. When you're very negative, guilty, ashamed, some of that can bring up negative karma. Our attitude, we can always forgive ourselves, which is an incredible thing. That any, the doors of suffering are always open. You walk through at any time if you know how to forgive yourself. Doesn't mean you forget, you've learned to become a better person. But punishing yourself for the things you've done in the past doesn't help anybody. And we have a football code in Australia, the Australian Football League, AFL it's called. And it's so popular in Australia that any Australians here, other than me? No, okay. So, AFL. Acknowledge, forgive, and learn. So if you have done some bad karma, just acknowledge it. Let somebody know. You're human, you make mistakes. Forgive it, which means no punishment. Because I said today, if you punish people, they refuse to admit what they've done. It goes underground and hides it. Why is it husbands and wives? They don't share the nasty stuff they've done. Because they think, if my wife found out, she'd kill me. She won't kill you, but you know, you could certainly get into big trouble. So you hide it. And that's even worse. As soon as it comes to the surface, you're so embarrassed, ashamed. Wouldn't it be wonderful if whatever mistake you made, you tell your wife immediately, sorry darling, I lost it. I forgot. Please forgive me. And she helps you. You're saying that because you trust her. You'll upset her, but you really need her help to do better next time. And she will need your help to do better next time. You acknowledge, forgive, which is my amnesty. And then you learn not to make the same mistake again. I've seen couples, one couple comes to mind, the wife found a piece of paper in his pocket from a brothel. He'd been visiting prostitutes. And she was devastated by the lack of trust she now had. Her husband had breached that trust they had once had. Because they were both Buddhists, they came to me and I said, look, Buddhist way, he does actually love you. You're a stupid thing, terrible thing, you feel so ashamed, upset about. Can you forgive him? If I forgive him, do the same again. No, just forgive. And the next step is probation. For a year. Make sure he gives you all his passwords to his emails. Goes through all the pockets. You can check him up, get a private investigator if you like to follow him. Now he's on notice. If he just breaks his probation, anything, that really is it. Done. The relationship is over. And then he promised in front of me he would never do that again. She promised to give him an extra chance for 1 year probation. And now he kept his probation. And now they always come to our temple every Monday usually, out of gratitude for getting their marriage back together again. He made a mistake, big one, and she forgave him. And I told him, well, you've got an amazing woman there who forgave you, and then he wouldn't. So yeah, you know, he just cherishes that so much, he's so grateful. And for her, you've got a guy there, you know, who's so you will never do that again, and then you will. And thank me that they're together, that they'll be together until they die. Beautiful act of love, which forgives. But don't stop with forgiving, to learn strategies in place so you prevent such things being likely to happen again. That's the karma we do. So, okay. Hope that was okay. There wasn't that many jokes. It wasn't such a vibe as I usually do because I was a bit tired because of the jet lag. But I did my very best. So hopefully you're okay. Okay. If you don't know already, but she has a little monastic residence here in Oxford. You have your resident nun, and she's a bhikkhuni, which is a very rare thing, a fully ordained Buddhist nun. And she is the only fully ordained Buddhist nun Theravada tradition in England. There are other nuns, but not fully ordained. It's like lower caste. And sometimes I feel really unfair. So, recently I got an award from Queen Elizabeth of Australia. Now, the Queen of England is also the Queen of Australia. And the protocol is, I've often called her the Queen of Australia, not the Queen of England. It's the Order of Australia. I was given that only last September for gender equity in Buddhism, for giving ordinations to Buddhist women. I'm a guy. I will never ever appreciate or feel what it must be like to be a Buddhist woman who's not treated as I am treated. I said, oh, that's all the same, you know, you can give you food and stuff. But guys, you can't understand because we're not women. But I have enough empathy and feeling to know I can't just sit here and let it happen. So it's, what day is it, 23rd, 26th?
Yeah, 2 days ago.
Yeah, 2 days ago, 10 years ago, I did the ordination for Buddhist women in Australia, just to get it started, and support bhikkhunis as much as I can. So it's a start, a fledgling here, over in Oxford, your city. So please nurture Buddhist women. Yeah, I can give talks, but some of my talks, they will never ever be able to touch women's issues. Come on. There's some things which she knows and feels which guys can never know or feel. I know that much. So that's a huge boost. There's Buddhism in the UK. And sometimes as a Buddhist, there's many things you're impressed with. It's freedom, it's just not so judgmentalism, living together in peace and harmony, no matter what tradition you are. Oh, so many monks and nuns from different traditions come to my monastery. We don't worry when they're from South Korea, whether they're from Bhutan, Nepal, just saying the ones who came recently. They're Buddhists, they're monks, my brothers. That's what it says, Sakyabhuta. We share the same father, the Buddha. Sakyadita, that's the Buddhist nuns. They're in the time of the Buddha. reinstated now, apart from legalities, I had a good brain. I learned Latin, did well at Latin, so I understand Pali. I'm using that knowledge of Pali and discriminative wisdom to realize it is legal, it is possible, why not? Just politics. So, to get that, why aren't there? I looked at a picture of the people in Parliament discussing Brexit. How many women were in the cabinet? Australia was worse in the current Liberal government there, mostly men. Does that mean that women? Actually, probably because women were too smart to be in government. I don't know why, but anyway, look, please support the Kunis. Number two, please let me go on. Number two, it's very well known that in religion, especially celibate monks or celibate priests, was it 7% responsible for sexual abuse? That was about a number. And you find in any organization where there is women just in leadership positions, the sexual abuse goes way down. It doesn't disappear. In any religion, it does decrease. So, for the religion which I chose and I love and I care for, it's got such beautiful things in it, I want to preserve those. Preserve even monasticism by having many leaders who are women. Done that in Australia, we've got a beautiful women's monastery. It's honestly, it's more beautiful than Bodhidharma monastery where I live. For the 583 acres of beautiful land. We have, how many nuns there? Bigger than these now?
12, 11 or 12.
11 or 12, there's a few. Novice bikunis, novice nuns, aspirants. Over there it's working really well. Plenty of support. I'm very proud of them. I just want to do the same in England. This is my homeland, I was born here. So I think I can't really sort of just forget about this place. And to do the same there. So please support Bengal Chandra. What's your address?
It's not public, but we have leaflets and we have an email address and
a
website.
You're not advertising.
It's not a public place.
Yeah, well, sometimes, you know, when you live, you know, people come. Can we come and visit you?
Absolutely.
There you can write on the write on the email.
Just
find out. Sorry?
Yeah, I know. So please support as best you can. So that means
you can come and stay, you can come and feed me, please.
Yeah.
So that I can get fat like the monks.
Yeah, look at that. So I want equity. When she's as fat as me, then I don't need to come to UK.
Oh. I'm on a diet.
Yeah. So that's just one of the nice social things we can do. And it will make us, you know, proud, you know, that Buddhism is not some of the other religions, male dominated. It won't be female dominated. Equity. So anyway, that's one of my projects which I won't stop promoting. Even LGBTQIA+ promote. There's a couple of people here who reminded me that I blessed a wedding. First gay wedding, which I bless. So proud of that and happy with that. Why not? There's many gay people in my community of Perth. Ever since this elderly gay man came up to me and he said to me, religion has been so cruel to the gays. He said that with such passion. It really hurt me. I went right inside. I thought, I can't stand just to sit by and just let that continue. So, in newspaper articles, publicly, try and support gay and lesbian, every other community. Not perfectly. I was so proud one day to receive the invitation to the gay, so the time, gay and lesbian Mardi Gras breakfast. So I'm invited. Well, I'm here. Well, I'm heterosexual before I became celibate. So, but I was very wonderful to see anybody who is not treated fairly is given a chance. And that's what Buddhism says, that you are treated according to your actions, not by your birth, by your gender, by anything else other than your actions. If you're disabled, welcome. If you're sick, welcome. But if you know you're a bad person who's cruel and mean, then maybe you're not welcome. So anyway, completely too became passionate about that, but something I'm really concerned about. So little by little we can do something with your help. So one thing we're thinking of doing, with the monks, it's the Gospel Buddhist Vihara here, is on Waisak Day. Waisak is the biggest celebration in the Buddhist year. Is to have a celebration also for the bhikkhunis. So they don't live on thin air. So even donations to help pay their rent, eventually get a permanent property for them in Oxford. It costs money, but it's worth it. I was going to say that one of my acts of generosity when I was a student at Cambridge, this lady gave a talk, I think I was amazed, but I got sidetracked. And it's a Tibetan man. I was so impressed that she's actually doing something to care for others, not just talk and write books. I went to my bank the next day, and I drew 20 quid out. And I was really important, that was about 2 or 3 weeks' food money for me. And my father had died. My mother was just a very secretary running a small company, living in a council house, council flat, sorry, not council house, doing it tough. But still, I went hungry because of that. I didn't eat as much as I needed. But I was always so proud of that. Remember it to this day. It was worth it to do something which I can remember. Even, ooh, I mean, that's about almost 50 years ago. To do something which I can be proud of. To start something. And all you traditional Buddhists, especially the Sri Lankans here, please support. Please excuse me, monks, but the monks' monasteries are well supported. We have lots of requisites, we have lots of monasteries. How many Sri Lankan monasteries have we got in the UK? How many Thai monasteries? How many Bikun monasteries? Zero. Just starting. So let's do something. Okay, so get the leaflets outside. Please excuse the advertising campaign, but I really believe in this. So it's something which I'm very willing to do whatever I can for.
And also, please excuse the not giving out the address. The one reason is because this is going like public on YouTube and everywhere, and I'm still alone in the residence. I'm just one bhikkhuni. So for my rules, I have to know who's coming and make sure, you know, that we know people. So, but you're very, very welcome.
Yeah.
So the email address is just a way for the first contact. But it's very simple. And it's a small place. It's a 4-bedroom house, but you're welcome to come and stay. Men can stay too if we have the space and if there's another female with me. And also we have a sutta discussion. I'm yet to kind of redo the schedule for the next term because I've just been in Perth on the rains retreat with Ajahn Brahm. But most probably it'll be on a Saturday evening. And we also have meditation every day, just a silent meditation session and then usually a Dhamma talk. So be in touch and and I'm teaching in various places around Oxford as well.
So she's a very good nun. I stabbed her at about QC quality control. Because my reputation is also on the line whenever I recommend somebody. So make sure that they're good teachers, good nuns, who keep their rules, which is really important. So you can trust them. Very good. So there is the advertisement. So now I wish you all a very happy evening. And see you again soon.